This is episode 136 of The Variety Artist. This is John Abrams, your host, and that guy that interviews successful variety artists from around the world every single week. My guest this week is a friend of mine. We've hung out at library showcases, taken our dogs to the dog park, even munched the Black Bear Diner with a bunch of folks from Kid Dabra. He really is the guy you see. But you're going to learn a bunch of things you didn't know about my guest. Things like his favorite pre-sweetened breakfast cereal, his stuntman career, his journey as a magician, and how he became one of the top balloon artists in the world. We even pull back the curtain on Kid Entertainers Fest. There's so much to love on this one. Enjoy!
Welcome to The Variety Artist, providing aspiring artists and entertainers with in-depth discussions from top performers from all over the world. So get ready to book some gigs, make some money, and have some fun with your host, John Abrams.
An international award-winning balloon artist and children's entertainer who has performed all across the USA, as well as the UK, France, Italy, Germany, and the Netherlands, Belgium, Greece, Japan, Hong Kong, Korea, and Israel. He's worked with Disney, Pixar, DreamWorks, Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network, and has performed at the White House on two occasions. He's the creative genius behind the highly successful Kids Entertainer Fest. Variety artist, I give you Buster Balloon.
Hello.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm going to start off with probably the toughest question of all, and it's what many of your fans have asked.
Okay, I'm ready.
What's your favorite pre-sweetened breakfast cereal?
Cap'n Crunch. Actually, Crunch Berries. Cap'n Crunch with Crunch Berries. That's my favorite. Not the all berries. That's too much berry. Cap'n Crunch is good on its own, but Cap'n Crunch with Crunch Berries, that's the one.
When I was a kid, well, still, I probably love Cap'n Crunch with Crunch Berries, but it always messed up the roof of my mouth.
Oh, yeah. And I don't eat it very often. I eat it like a couple times a year at this point, because as I'm sure you yourself have discovered, the older you get, the slower you heal. I'm creeping up on 51 right now, and really one box of Cap'n Crunch and my mouth is shredded for like a month. So yeah, I got to really pace myself on that.
You got to take some time to repair. I'm going to bring up some things that maybe a lot of people here don't know. Tell me about your stuntman career.
Oh, that was thankfully brief and short-lived and didn't do too much damage to me. Straight out of high school, there was a guy who worked at the local magic shop that I hung out at and I eventually started working at. He was on a stunt team that did live shows. So on weekends, there was this big place called the Culpeper Cattle Ranch. They'd have company picnics out there every weekend during the summer, and they would bring us in to do two or three stunt shows a day and a couple of gunfights in between, and they needed an extra body. So I went out there, and they liked me enough to invite me back, and I spent about 3 years, I think, getting shot with blanks and beat on with axe handles and doing Western stunt shows. So if you've ever been to like Knott's Berry Farm or Universal Studios back when they had their Western stunt show, oh, yeah. Very much like that. Just a bunch of guys in cowboy costumes, cracking jokes and shooting blanks at each other.
Did you learn how to fall off buildings and things?
I did one high fall. I had been on the team for a while and we felt like it was time for me to finally do it. We actually had a set at the place where we did these shows for the most part. We did outside gigs sometimes, but most of them were there at the Culpeper Ranch. So they had built a Western town facade for us. So I get up there and it was a pretty easy fall. There was a balcony with no rail on the end of it.
Lovely.
So you just run off the end. You want to go flat. Okay. You want to be horizontal, parallel with the earth.
Yes.
Okay. Because you want to land flat. That way the splatting of you on the bag gets distributed. It's not all hitting one spot. Getting ready to go. And what's supposed to happen is I'm supposed to run off the end of the balcony, going face first towards the bag. And then somewhere on the trip down, you just turn your head and your whole body will follow. Super easy. And that way you land on your back instead of on your face. A little more comfortable that way.
Yeah.
We had just come back from a competition and it was a Western reenactment competition, which meant everyone who was in the stunt show had to have authentic Western wear, which meant we all had to get boots that had leather on the soles instead of rubber. It was also early in the morning and there was still lots of dew on the balcony. And it was kind of slick at the end.
Oh, no.
So I get a running start, and just as I hit the end of the balcony, I slipped.
Perfect.
My leather heel shoes or boots hit that slick spot, and all I remember is being at the end of the balcony and then being on the bag with the entire stunt team looking down at me. I don't remember the fall.
Oh, that was it? That's your whole career.
I do not remember the fall. I know that everyone is amazed I survived that fall without injury.
You lived to tell.
Because the way I came off the balcony, I should not have hit. Everyone said the same. They all rushed over. Like by the time I opened my eyes, they're all there, because as soon as I went off the end of the balcony, they all knew I was in trouble, and they're all rushing in to catch me because they thought I was going to miss the bag entirely.
Oh.
So the way I went off, I should have just, because, you know, they put the bag a few feet out because you're going to run and you're going to go outward.
Yeah.
You don't want the bag like directly below. You want it out a little bit. Well, because I slipped, I was going straight down, and I was going straight for the gap between the building and the bag.
Great.
So, yeah, I somehow miraculously managed to land mostly on the bag and not be injured or crippled after that. But that was my first and last high fall.
We got
so many people on this team doing the fall bag. I'm good with groundwork. I'll do the hand-to-hand stuff, the gunfights. You guys do the jumping off the building stuff.
Well, now you also, you mentioned studying magic. You're a magician before. We're going to get into all the balloon stuff too.
Oh yeah. I started magic. Well, okay. So the legend goes, I started drawing and sculpting when I was 3. I started doing magic when I was about 5.
Sculpting as in sculpting or sculpting balloons?
Sculpting.
Okay.
Yeah. Like clay or Play-Doh, silly putty, whatever I get my hands on. I just loved art when I was a kid. And then about 5 years old, I discovered magic, and that totally blew my mind, and I was obsessed with that. And then when I was about 18, I discovered balloon twisting, and that was like the perfect marriage of the two. It was creating visual, tangible art and being an entertainer at the same time. And that's where the whole balloon thing grew out of eventually.
A lot of people, when they think of twisting, they think, oh, I want you to twist balloon animals after your regular show, whatever it may be.
Right.
But you've taken it way past that, doing balloon shows. So what inspired you to do that?
I hated balloon twisting.
That'll do it.
All right. So when I say that I discovered balloon twisting when I was 18 years old, that let me fill in the gaps on that, because that sounds all romantic. Here's what really happened.
Yeah.
When I was about 18 years old, 18, 19, I guess, I had a friend who was doing Sunday brunches at a TGI Fridays, doing strolling magic table to table. And I desperately wanted to do restaurant magic. I wanted to get experience, to get in front of real audiences. He needed a fill-in guy. He was starting to get more outside work, private parties and things from people he met there at the restaurant. So he needed someone to fill in, and he asked if I would do it. The catch was, it was Sunday family brunch at a Fridays, and they wanted balloons with the magic. So if I wanted a magic gig, I had to learn balloons too, which annoyed me, because I thought I was better than that. I thought, no, I'm a magician. I don't need balloons. Nobody needs balloons. My magic shall carry me through the day.
Yeah.
So I reluctantly learned my first handful of balloon sculptures just so I could get the gig. Figuring, you know, I'll do as few balloons as possible and just do the magic that's going to blow everybody's minds. The more I did that gig, the more I'd be at tables, and I would do card tricks and coin tricks that I had spent weeks and months and sometimes even longer honing and perfecting and learning all the latest sleights and stuff. It got a good reaction, and then I would twist a balloon animal, and they would look at me with slack jaws and awestruck eyes and say, oh my gosh, how did you do that? I'm like, I could have handed you a balloon, and you could have followed me step by step, and you could have made the exact same thing. And that's what you're impressed with, and not the card trick that I nearly broke my fingers learning. So yeah, I eventually realized that, as much as I hated to admit it, the balloons were getting the reaction that I wanted from the magic. Eventually, you going way farther into the future, then I realized that I didn't like being a balloon factory. I didn't like being somebody who just stood in front of a huge line of people manufacturing balloons as glorified party favors.
Yeah.
I wanted to make the cool stuff that I knew was possible with balloons. And I wanted the interaction. I wanted to be able to like take my time to talk to somebody and interact with them and make a special moment with them while I made this amazing thing. And so that's when I got the idea of doing the balloon shows.
Mm.
That idea was already in my mind of trying to make balloons into entertainment and a spectacle and not just manufacturing things as rapidly as you could. And then I went to my first balloon convention. I went to Twist and Shout. I think 2001 was my very first balloon convention. And there was actually a stage competition. That's when I learned that there are actually people who really did balloon shows.
You're like, whoa.
Yeah, here I thought I was breaking new ground with this idea. It turns out it's been around for a few decades. So yeah, but seeing other people doing it, I was like, oh my God, this really is possible. And then also it showed me things that I hadn't even considered. You know, I never considered that balloons could be entertainment strictly for adults, that it wasn't just for kids audiences or family audiences, that there are people in Europe who at the time, I'm just going to say it, at the time, American balloon entertainers sucked. Just we didn't know what we were doing at all at that point. So the Europeans, every year, the Europeans would come in and just dominate the stage competitions at balloon conventions because they'd been doing it so much longer. Yeah. Kind of what happened was balloon twisting started in vaudeville. It actually started on stage. It didn't start with making balloons for a bunch of kids. It started on stage. When vaudeville died, that's what created line twisting because there was no longer a place to perform with balloons. But in Europe, cabaret never really died. So while we lost vaudeville here, cabaret kept going in Europe. And so that legacy of balloons being on stage and being entertainment continued. And so literally they had decades on us. We had sort of dropped the ball for a really long time and they just kept evolving with it. So watching the Europeans and watching what they were doing for nightclub acts, for strictly like in a nightclub cocktail situation for a strictly adult audience, what they were doing on stage was beautiful and amazing. Totally blew my mind. That's when I was like, I need to create a balloon show. I need to make balloons into full entertainment because at this point I'm lucky that I don't do very many line twisting gigs. Like I'll do them two or three times a year, usually to help a friend who needed backup or something, but I don't enjoy it. I want to create experiences and I want to connect with people.
Right.
You don't get to do that nearly as much when you're just a balloon factory.
What are the best ways to connect with audiences, whether it's a balloon show or a magic show or whatever type of show you're doing?
There are so many little, like there's no one way of doing it and there's no real recipe for doing it. The thing that I discover is, I'm going to go off on a tangent here real quick.
That's okay.
I talk to young performers and they're like, hey, what books and videos do I need to absorb? And what do I need to know to become a really good professional right now? Because I don't want to wait the 10 years or whatever. Or they ask, how do I get there the fastest? Like, how long is this going to take? Is this going to be 2 years, 5 years, 10 years? Like, what's the time frame I should be? Like, there's no schedule.
Yeah.
There's no schedule and there's no recipe. There's you learn stuff and you absorb it at your own rate. And not everyone gets it at the same time. And not everyone gets it at all. I know lots of people who have been performing longer than I have, who have been told these things. They've had the chance to learn these things over and over again, but it just never clicks with them. And they never go beyond a certain point with their ability to connect with an audience or with their skills as a performer. But the things that I have found the most useful, the lessons I've learned that have made the biggest difference for me, eye contact. And this is a big thing I learned from Jeff McBride, is you always make eye contact with everyone in the audience, even if it's just for a split second. This coming Friday, I'm going to be at Pearson Park Amphitheater in Anaheim, and that's a 2,000 seat venue.
Right.
So we usually have, I think we get between 600 and 800 people there, that's a pretty large audience. And then you scatter them out because they're going to be socially distanced. So we got like 600 to 800 people scattered amongst 2,000 seats in an outdoor venue with lots of distractions. My goal is during that show to make everyone at least feel like I made eye contact with them once. So I'm constantly sweeping the entire audience.
Bob Fitch talks a lot about that. He talks about how the difference between being a windshield wiper and this like looking at the audience back and forth, as opposed to picking individual people and having eye contact with them. So they know that you're relating to them.
And I know that sounds difficult or even impossible, especially with a large venue. It's actually not. And it changes everything. It really, really changes everything when people feel like they were connected to you in that way. It literally makes them feel connected when you look at them and they see you looking at them.
I don't know if entertainers understand the power of that. There you are in front of whatever, 500 people or 1,000 people or 2,000 people. You're a superstar. And when you make eye contact with that one person, they go, oh my gosh, the superstar made eye contact with me. It's very, very important and impactful.
Yeah. And at the same time, there are the people who are like, oh yeah, the entertainer, they don't care. They're just the they're the star. They don't care about me. So yeah, when you do go out of your way to connect with that person, then they like you. Yeah. You know, that makes it feel like you're not just up there trying to be a big show off. You really are trying to connect with them and have an experience with them. And that's a huge, huge shift in the dynamic from a lot of shows. Really, like the yin and the yang of my audience management and audience experience guides have been Jeff McBride and Abner the Eccentric. Between the two of them, they completely revolutionized everything that I thought and did and believed about doing stage shows. The big thing with Abner, which I know you've had Abner on, and I'm sure he talked about breathing, that is so important. What people don't realize is they hear, oh yeah, breathing. I know how to do that. It's not just your own breathing, though. Abner goes into this in his master classes, the longer sessions. It's not just that you're breathing when you're on stage. It's also that you want to build rapport with the audience. That literally means you're breathing together, right? So when you pop out on stage, when the audience sees you take your first breath, ideally, they should take a breath with you. And when you release your breath, they should release at the same time. And you are literally, I'm in a theater of close to 1,000 people, and I am trying to get all 1,000 of those people breathing in sync with me, because then we're in rapport. Wow. I know that sounds like a weird little thing to do, but next time you're with a friend in person, try this. Just sit there and intentionally, consciously, have a conversation and don't match their breathing. Don't match their breathing and don't match their posture, because as human beings, you watch it. Go to a Starbucks and watch people sitting together having conversations, and you will see that their breathing syncs up and even their postures. If they're having a pleasant conversation, they'll be in similar poses. If one's leaning in, very engaged and interested, the other one will lean in and be very engaged and interested. If one's leaning back and being relaxed, the other one will lean back and relax. If one has their hands on the table, chances are the other one has their hands on the table. If you see a good conversation happening, those things will be going on naturally. We don't think about them. They just happen. We just sync up with people. Have a conversation with somebody sometime and don't match their pose and intentionally mismatch your breathing and watch how awkward it gets really fast.
That word awkward was just swimming through my head just now.
It's horrible. It is horrible. It is an awful experience. You'll do it once. You'll do it once, I promise you. And then you'll never want to do it again because it's so awful. It feels so weird.
Oh, yeah. Are there any other things that you can think of that help us to engage the audience?
Those are the two biggest ones. And then, weirdly, I didn't start my magic career until I was, my professional, really like full-time magic and balloon career didn't start until I was 30.
Wait, you and me both.
Yeah. I wanted to, like from the time I was 16, I was like, I want to be a magician. And then, I want to make balloons. But yeah, it was 30 before I finally figured out the recipe to to make it happen as a full-time gig, and also just have the courage, you know, because a lot of it is just, you got to jump in there and just do it. Exactly. There's no planning. I'm not saying go out without a plan and don't have a safety net, but really at some point you just got to do it.
You got to jump off that slippery balcony.
Yeah. Just dive off the slippery balcony, leather heels and all, and see what happens.
That's right. I've told this story a million times. I'm sure every entertainer has this story. The first time you do a show, it's no matter how much you prepare, no matter how many times you do that card trick, that first show is tough because you don't know how the audience is going to react. And then the more you do it, the better you get at it. And the more you read the audience and the better you are.
And I'll say even, beyond the first show that's new, not just like new material, but the first time you do a show in a venue you've never done.
Yep.
The first time I went from doing birthday parties and private parties to doing a library. Oh my gosh, what an insane shift that was. It's a total tonal shift in the audience because you're so used to private parties where everyone's friends and they're synced up. And then you go into a library show where you don't have that pack mentality. And you really do have to connect with every kid individually because it's not like, if the birthday kid or whoever the leader of their pack is likes me, the rest of the kids will fall in line. That doesn't happen in the school show or library show where there's so many different kids who don't socialize together. Yeah. And then when you go into a theater, that becomes a new environment too. So yeah, I find every time I go into a new environment that I've never performed in before, it's that wonky, I don't know what to expect thing the first time out.
Yeah. Have you found there are huge differences according to what country you're in with their traditions and such?
Oh, actually that's actually been the least weird thing to adjust to. I think if you've got the basics down, not the basics of your magic, I mean, you definitely should know your material before you go put it in front of an audience. But if you are good with connecting with an audience, if you've got the eye contact, the breathing, if you're really doing a show to connect with them and not just as a show off, you can go anywhere in the world and it'll work. And I will tell you, as a balloon twister, I've done what I call circle shows, which is kind of like street performing, where I don't make balloons for everyone. I make two or three big creations. That's just two or three big creations that are made as entertainment for everyone to watch me create them. And then I give them to whoever I choose at the end of the balloon sculpture being made. Years ago, I went to a balloon a clown convention in Ohio. All of the clowns at this little regional conference were telling me how that's all really nice theory and everything, but that's not going to work here in Ohio. You might get away with that in LA where they're totally different, but you're not going to get away with that here. That's just not going to fly.
I've heard that many times from different groups. Yeah. What makes you think that you can do a show for our school district? Is it so much different?
Right. Yeah. So at the end of the convention, they did a thing where all the clowns go to this park down the street and there's a big festival. Kids come and families come and just hang out with the clowns for the day. And I went with a pocket full of balloons. Not a big pocket full. I would take like five sculptures that I was going to make during my set. And I just bundled up those five sculptures individually so I could pull them out easily, pack it at a time when I needed them. I made the first balloon and drew a crowd like, who's it for? Who's it for? Hang on. Who's it for? Who's it? Keep making this beautiful, big, crazy thing. And then I say, this one is for you. And I give it to one of the kids who's just been there the whole time and totally into it. And then I explained the rules. I said, look, I only brought these five balloon sculptures with me today. I'm not even going to tell you what they are yet. I'm just showing you these are the balloons that I have for these five things. That's the first one. I'm going to make four more. So obviously you're not all going to get balloons. But if you want to hang out and watch me make them and have some fun, you're more than welcome to stay. And by the end, I had a huge crowd and everyone had a great time. There was no arguing or anything when I wanted to leave. Meanwhile, there was a clown who had decided I was nuts and that I was going to cause a riot by doing this. And so he had brought his assorted, like one of those people who doesn't even have like his balloons assorted out in a bag or a belt. He literally just has the Qualitex bag with the assorted balloons in it. And he is there with a line of about 30 kids looking really miserable trying to make balloons. Just
in it, twisting. Just
waved a long way back to the hotel. So then a couple years later, I go to Israel for the first time and I teach this same concept and they all say, you will never get away with that here in Israel. Children in Israel will never, there's no way they're not going to go for it. You're just going to cause trouble. And the last day of the balloon convention, we're all down in the lobby of the hotel. And it was planned. It was a group activity. The hotel announced, if you have children, bring them to the lobby at this time. We'll have balloon twisters here. And everyone is frantically cranking out as much stuff as they can. I came down with my three or four balloon sculptures. I picked a nice big spot so I had room for my crowd to build. I made the first thing, built the crowd. I explained the rules. I'm gonna make a couple more things and then I'm out and I'll be done. But if you guys wanna stay and have some fun with me, you're more than welcome to. And I had a huge crowd. I made my four sculptures. I got tons of thank yous and hugs and then went back to my hotel room while everybody else was trying to beat off the crowd that hadn't got balloons from them yet.
Ah, that's great. That's great. All right. Every time I have a new person on, I put on my Facebook that you can ask questions of the person I'm having on.
Why would you do a terrible thing like that, John?
Just to annoy you. All right. Wait, before I get to your fan questions, I have one question for you from me. Also a fan, by the way. Here is my big question. Why is Halloween so awesome?
Because Halloween is awesome.
That's it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's it, okay.
Here are my thoughts. And again, there's no scientific backing on this. I don't have data. I just have my own personal experience with this. Here's what I love about Halloween and why I think other people love Halloween too, especially kids. For me personally, I was always the weird kid. Like my parents, my family seriously spent most of my childhood trying to get me to be normal. And it just never took, thankfully. but it's awful. You know, I say that jokingly, but we talk about accepting people. We talk about kids feeling accepted and welcome. Here's the thing. There are kids who have way bigger issues than me. There are kids who don't feel comfortable telling their family that they're gay. There are kids who don't feel comfortable telling their parents that they think they should be a girl or a boy. There are these really hard conversations. I know from my experience how awful it was growing up in a family that treated me like an outsider because I was the weird kid who didn't like normal things and they didn't know how to process that. And I can only imagine how much more horrible it is when your family completely rejects you based on who you are. So for me, Halloween was great because Halloween was the one night it was okay to be the weirdo. Halloween was the night when it was okay to be absolutely anything you wanted to be. It was the night when all bets were off. The things that are normally taboo, normally is spooky stuff and scary stuff, that's supposed to be bad. And this is the night we embrace it. I'm all in for that. Yeah. And I think that's where my love of monsters, for a lot of kids, the love of monsters comes from you feel like the outsider. And when you see your first monster movie, when you see Frankenstein or the Creature from the Black Lagoon, right, and you realize that this is a being that is being rejected and being shunned for being different, but look at how powerful they are. And that's why little boys love big trucks and dinosaurs. Because little kids look at something that's really big. No grown-up tells a dinosaur when to go to bed.
That's true.
And if a big truck is coming, you don't tell it to stop, you get the heck out of its way. Yeah. So they see these things, they see these big, powerful things, and that's really empowering to them. They want to be powerful because when you're really little, especially, you have no control over your life.
Right.
You're told when you're going to bed. You're told when you're waking up. You're told what you're going to wear. You're told what you're going to eat. And it's really long time before you get any kind of autonomy at all on those things.
Yeah.
And so I think for Halloween, you know, and even if you look at other holidays, look at Christmas and Easter, they're wonderful. But Christmas and Easter are, okay, put on the good clothes. No, don't get any dirt on your good clothes. Now we're going here. Now we're going there. Now we have to go to other grandma's house. No, don't eat the candy because we have to go to the next place. There's going to be more candy there. Even holidays, which are fun and awesome, and you get presents and stuff. But even there, there's so many rules. Halloween is the night you pick your costume and you go out and you get to decide which houses are too scary and which ones aren't. For weird kids, especially, I think for all kids, Halloween is the free holiday. It's the fun holiday. It's the holiday where there are no rules and no schedule. We're just going out and having fun and being us.
Oh, that's fascinating. I didn't expect that answer when I asked, by the way.
And for me personally, as somebody who has a lifelong love of spooky stuff, I love it. I love. It was really a community effort. It wasn't that we all planned to do it. It's that enough people decided to do it at the same time. But I know here in the U.S., Halloween has become a huge holiday. A lot of the world looks at us and they think we're nuts. But it's slowly growing in other places too. Australia, the U.K., they're getting their Halloween groove on now. Mm. And even here in the U.S., I've got people who are like, well, that's L.A. It's like, yeah, because here in L.A., the entertainers and the entertainment venues, like the theme parks, even restaurants and other places, decided this is a big business opportunity and a really fun opportunity, and we're going to embrace it. The more that happened, the more other people jumped on board. Mm-hmm. You know, I found that when I first started really pushing my Halloween show for my clients, it was like, oh, yeah, well, we're not really doing a Halloween thing this year. And the next year they call like, hey, we're going to do a Halloween thing. Are you available? Now, I'm sorry. My Halloween is completely packed. Okay, are you available the day before, the day after? Yeah, we can make that work. And the next year, somebody else calls like, hey, so I'm sure your Halloween is already booked. Are you available the night before? You know what? That entire weekend is booked right now.
Just so people listening to this know, I know Buster personally. Isn't the entire, almost the entire month of October is booked with Halloween gigs. Isn't that right? No?
No. It's 6 weeks. Oh. My Halloween shows, okay, my Halloween season goes from the last week of September through the first week of November, because I now have my clients trained that they will call me extra early and they will book a post-Halloween, like, okay, Halloween was so much fun and we kind of miss it. Here's one last little bit of Halloween fun, so I'll book that whole week as well. And the week before is the, hey, let's get ready for Halloween, because I've made the entire month of October about Halloween. And now my clients do too. Now I've got, you're here in the library market in California, you know, I've got libraries that call me, and like, you know, the ones who 10 years ago weren't doing any Halloween event, now they've got Halloween activities the entire month of October. Mm. And they'll bring me in again that last week of September. I'll come in to kick it off, or I'll come in for that last little goodbye to Halloween right after the holiday and book that solid. And I love it. Oh, it's so good. It's so much fun. And here's the thing. Now I am, because one of the greatest things, you know, I talked about the whole not having a place where you belong and community thing. But now, thanks to the internet, we do. You know, that's why we're seeing the world change so much, because as a weird kid, there was no way for me to know where the other weird kids were. And now the internet exists. And now I know exactly where the weird kids are, not just my local area, but worldwide. And I can connect with them. So now I've even got clients who, when they find out that I am the Halloween king, when they see how booked I am for Halloween, they'll call me up and say, hey, we have a birthday party in June. Are you willing to do your Halloween show for us? Because we've got a kid who loves creepy stuff. Absolutely. So yeah, the Halloween show, actually, my Halloween season is about 6 weeks, but my Halloween show usually comes out between 6 and 12 times a year. Other than that, depending on who's doing what where. I've even got a horror convention that books me every August now. So that's another 3 days of Halloween shows and madness I get to be a part of.
Okay, I can go on and on. You can go on and on. We both can talk forever about Halloween.
We've done a whole hour just on Halloween.
Yeah. Seriously. We'll rebook this for an hour of Halloween talk. But I promised a bunch of your fans that I would ask you fan questions.
All right.
Because we don't have a ton of time left, we're going to make these quick. I might push you. I might stop you.
All right.
Here we go.
Lightning round. Do it.
Here we go. And believe me, these aren't going to be lightning round questions either. They'll probably need an explanation, but we'll see what happens. All right. Giuseppe Riano, a.k.a. the puppeteer extraordinaire Joe Self.
Hi, Joe.
We all know Joe. What was the inspiration for creating the character of Buster Balloon? Oh, yeah. That'll be a quick answer.
Yeah, there's no character. This is me. Joe knows that, by the way. I am a 50-year-old man child who still loves pre-sweetened breakfast cereals, much to the dismay of my doctor, who still watches cartoons on the regular. If I have my choice between like the latest hot movie and like a Disney animated, I'm going Disney animated every time.
All right.
I love cartoons. I you guys can't see it, but John can see the mass of both magic props and toys behind me in my office.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Not a virtual set. This is where I live. Got my Buzz Lightyear sippy cup from Disneyland and a whole bunch of other toys I've collected over the years. I have a little Pinkie Pie, my little pony figurine, because Pinkie Pie is best pony. It's not an act. And let's jump back to like the early inspiration stuff for a minute. When I was younger, I really tried to create a character and a persona that I thought would be palatable to the audience. I wanted to create something that they were going to like, because again, I grew up in a family where I was told that I was wrong for being the weirdo. It took a really long time to unlearn all of that, to finally say, you know what, I'm going to embrace the weird stuff. And the more I just became myself on stage and in front of my audiences, the more they reacted to it, the more I dropped any facade at all. And even that's now so cool. I discovered that there's stuff that obviously you don't want to put every part of your life out there. If you're going through, you know, if you've got relationship issues, maybe don't bring that up in the middle of a kid's show. Maybe not appropriate there. But the more you become vulnerable on stage, you know, if something happens in my show and I just stop, and if I'm honest with the audience, I think one of the most powerful things, I'm not saying I want this to ever happen, but it does happen. Every once in a while, there's a kid in the audience who gets upset for any number of reasons. And I mean, John knows from doing library shows, you know, you're packed in this tiny community room, all the parents at the back, all the kids are on the floor, and there's literally no walkway sometimes. There's no wiggle room to get from where kids are up front to the back without hurdling a couple hundred children. And every once in a while, a parent puts their small child up there, they get overwhelmed and they freak out and start crying. And the fact that I'm comfortable enough in my show, I don't have to keep being funny. I don't have to keep being on. I know that I'm having experience and I'm trying to create a relationship and a connection with these people. What kind of person would I be if I just kept going with my wacky laugh fest? So I'll stop the show.
Yeah.
Kids close enough, I'll get right down there, you know, get down on one knee, so you're on their level, and say, what's going on? And find out. Usually it's they want their parent. If I can get to the kid, I'll usually bring them up front so the parent can see exactly which kid needs them, but I'll stop the show. That's so much more important.
This is kind of a side benefit, but that is very endearing to the audience.
It is. Yeah. I can't advocate for wanting to do that on purpose, trying to replicate that moment. But again, it's not about doing the wacky stuff. It's about being genuine and being sincere and being real. And if you're being genuine and sincere and real when you're doing the fun stuff with them, and then you can be that same genuine, sincere, real person when something doesn't go right and you have to deal with a situation. Yeah. Now you're a real person. And we started talking about this earlier, the connecting with the audience. People don't connect with a character on stage. They may relate to a character on stage. They won't necessarily connect with a character on stage. You are not a character on stage. You're a human being, and you are breaking the fourth wall. you are connecting with the audience. This isn't a play, it's not a movie. You are a human being interacting with other human beings, whether it's one or a thousand. Being yourself on stage and being real is the greatest thing you can ever do to connect with an audience. Even beyond the eye contact and the breathing, those are part of it. Those actually happen naturally as part of the process. But yeah, just at your core, be who you are on stage. Don't be a phony. So yeah, Buster Balloon came out of me deciding to just be me for the first time, to really just genuinely be myself as a performer and on stage. More and more, I've been Buster Balloon for 10 years now. The name change became legal 10 years ago.
But wait, that's question one.
Sorry. Hang on, we'll fix that in editing. So
yeah. By the way, the next question was, why did you decide to change your name? That was actually the next question that Giuseppe had.
All right. So becoming Buster Balloon, yeah, it was really about becoming myself. And more and more as time's gone on, I am becoming more and more myself. Which may be a bad thing at some point, because I think I'm turning into a grumpy old man. I'm not sure how that's going to translate to a kid's show, but it'll be fun. We'll make it fun. Why did I change the name? There were a couple things. Actually, it was done partly out of convenience. My wife, Annie Banani, and I have our company, Acme Balloon Company. And when I would go to do shows, I would get just a laundry list of wrong billings. So I would show up and it would say Don Caldwell's Buster Balloon Show, or Don Caldwell's Acme Balloon Company, or Acme Balloon Buster Show. You think of a wrong combination of my birth name, my real name now, and our company name, and they would make it happen on a sign somewhere. And then same thing happened with checks. You know, we were trying to get paid, and didn't matter what I put on the invoice and the contract, I would still get a weird amalgamation of those three names, have to go back and have them rewrite a check because I couldn't convince the bank that this was a mix-up of everything we had. So it was really part just practical. It was also one of my big heroes and influences is Paul Rubens, Pee-wee Herman.
Yeah, sure.
When Pee-wee was doing his TV show, when you watch the credits, you'll see Paul Rubens is never listed as Pee-wee Herman. It's always Pee-wee Herman as himself.
Yeah, I didn't actually know his name until later on.
And that was what he was going for. He didn't want kids to know his real name. And he made a real big deal of going out in public not looking anything like Pee-wee. He never wanted to be recognized out of the suit as Pee-wee. You can find pictures of him in like the 80s and 90s, and it never looked anything like him. You would never know it was the same guy when he was out on the street going places. And I like that because beyond just the accounting and business side of my name not matching, I didn't want to go somewhere and the kids are confused because it says Don Caldwell as Buster Balloon or whatever.
Sure.
Like, no, I'm just Buster Balloon. It's kind of like, you know, if you're Santa, you don't show up and say, hi, today we have Don Caldwell as Santa. No, that's not how that works. No. And even when kids don't believe that Buster Balloon is my real name, the moment I pull out my driver's license and show it to them, just the look at, they get the same look they get when they believe somebody really is Santa. They realize, oh my gosh, you're not a guy putting on an act. You're not just a silly guy making stuff up. You really are Buster Balloon.
That's awesome. And if it fits your character, your branding, the whole thing, it's a beautiful piece, by the way.
Thank you.
Just from me to you.
Yeah, I definitely have my grumpy side and I have my off moments. But for the most part, the guy you see on stage is the exact same person I am. You know, if we're hanging out, having fun together, you're hanging out and having fun with Buster Balloon. There's not some other guy who's going to be there that shows up in my place. It's always me.
That's cool. We'll go to our next question. One of your next fans, another LA guy, Rob Balchunas.
Hi, Rob.
AKA Rob the Balloon Guy.
That's just his name. Don't actually rob him.
That's what I hear. He asks, or he says, you've been involved with a number of different industries. You know, balloons, magic, we've already discussed a bunch. What are some of the things you like and dislike about each of them?
Next question.
Get yourself in trouble, huh?
Okay. Magicians. I love magic dearly. Magicians are a whole different story. We're going to jump back to what we were talking about before, too, like learning how to connect with an audience. One of the best things I ever did in my life to train for being a successful performer was waiting tables. Mm-hmm. Waiting tables and twisting balloons. Because as a waiter, you're not the boss. Your job is just to take orders and requests all night. That's your whole gig. And same thing as a balloon twister. For most balloon twisters, you work a line, you're just taking requests and you make whatever they ask for. And if they want it pink, they get it in pink, even if you think it looks horrible. That was such a great experience because that knocked the magician ego out of me. Mm. And I went back to doing shows after being a waiter and after kind of switching over more to balloons than magic. I became such a better performer because I was no longer trying to show off for the audience. I was trying to be of service to the audience. Right. I was there to make them laugh. I was there to make them feel wonder and awe. I was there and eventually realizing that the importance of what I was doing was really to connect them. As a community, we have a group experience, and that's such an, if we've learned nothing else in the last year and a half in lockdown, it's that we need that interaction. We need that community experience in person together.
I've missed it so much. And I think everybody listening to this probably has too.
And when I was a young magician, I had the, sorry if I tick anybody off, I had the typical arrogant magician attitude of, I'm a magician, watch how amazing I am. And that's garbage. That doesn't work at all. Yeah, having that knocked out of me really, really helped me a lot and changed how I performed. So I love magic. I'm not so hot on magicians a lot of times. Kids magicians are another story. Kids magicians tend to be a better community. Magicians are very closed off. What I do like about them is they're very dedicated to preserving the history. It's very easy to track down if you're interested in a certain trick and you want to figure out like what are the variations on it. You can follow the lineage of that. And there are people who know that lineage and can share it with you. Balloon twisting is great because it's totally open source. Everybody shares everything. But in being so open and welcoming, they haven't done a great job of keeping track of the history. And a lot of the pioneers, the people who actually started balloon twisting, really kind of got lost in the shuffle. And it's really hard for the few people who are trying to regain that history and document it to find stuff because so little of it was saved because we were just balloon twisters. Nobody cared. Clowns. I like clowns. I like them better when they know how to turn it off. And as I'm getting older, because really discovering yourself is a lifelong journey. Like I couldn't have just been myself on stage when I was 20 because I didn't know who the hell I was at 20.
Yeah.
I was still figuring it out. Now at 50, I know exactly who I am and I can do that on stage. But I meet clowns and they're always on and it's always a joke a minute. And it's, can we have a normal conversation? Put the rubber chicken down. No more squeaking. No more puns. Can we just talk like people for a couple minutes?
I'm going to make an entire industry angry because I have the exact same feeling with comedians, stand-up comedians.
A lot, yeah.
When I'm sitting there having dinner and just relaxing and they can't turn it off, it drives me up a wall. Did I just make a bunch of people mad?
It's not everybody. I know plenty of clowns who can turn it off and we can have a real conversation about real world things. Yeah. And then we can cut up too. We can totally crack each other up and have fun, but it's nice to be able to have a real person conversation sometimes and not always be, you know, a big pet peeve. And this is not just clowns. This is magic, clowns, everything. If we go out to dinner, don't decide that you're going to go on walkabout and just go up to random tables and entertain them. That's the performer equivalent of a cell phone. Instead of staring at your screen, you've gone off because I'm no longer laughing at your jokes and being amazed by your tricks. You have to go and do it for somebody else.
Yeah, don't do your routine in front of me either.
Yeah, I don't really want to see it either. Yeah. Chances are I've already seen it. I'm 50. I've been doing this a long time.
I've seen a lot of entertainers.
Or a variation on it, and I kind of don't care. Yeah. If I want to see it, I'll tell you.
All right, we'll go on to the next one before we make more people mad. All right, here's one from some strange person. this lady named Annie Benanni. I'm not sure if you're familiar with her.
Sounds hot though.
Yeah, that's what I hear. She's the wife of an unnamed famous balloon artist. I'm not quite sure.
That's an oxymoron.
What special stuff do you have planned for the upcoming week that your wife's out of town?
A lot of scary movies, because my wife does not watch scary movies at all. So I'll be spending a lot of time just watching. I'll be binge watching all the stuff I can't watch when she's here. All of it. A lot of Tostino's pizza rolls. It's pretty much me and the dogs are eating nothing but pizza rolls.
A lot of cereal.
Yeah, that's my whole life.
Okay, I'll check that one off. We're done with that. You kind of answered this question earlier, but I'm going to give him a shout out anyway. Aaron McGaw, an amazing magician out of Las Vegas. He says, I have fond memories of Buster doing a more adult-themed twist to music. Why don't we see more balloon work for adult audiences?
It's out there. It absolutely is. My daughter, Tawny Noreen, a.k.a. Tawny Bubbles, a.k.a. Tawny B, she lives in Vegas, and she does lots of adult stuff. I don't do a lot of adult stuff. I'll do it once in a while, but the truth is, when I say I'm a man-child, I really am. I enjoy adult humor. I don't enjoy performing it. Mm. So I will occasionally do a more risque performance or a more adult performance, but really kids are my audience. Mm. I there's nothing I love more than getting a room full of kids laughing.
Yeah.
I'll take kids over adults any day as an audience. So that's why I focus there, but there's plenty. Yeah. There are people out there doing more adult stuff and not just adult, like, you know, dirty, raunchy. There are people doing more mature, more elegant stuff. Sure. The balloon dress world has completely exploded the last few years. And now, you know, there are balloon dress fashion shows happening around the world. In fact, because we talked about Tawny a few years ago, she got flown to Egypt for a week-long gig. Her job was to make three different balloon dresses a day for like five days for an event in Egypt. Yeah, so there's definitely a more adult side to balloons. I'm not it. I'll do it once in a while. I'm guessing he's talking about my performance at Jeff McBride's Wonderground when I made a pinup girl out of balloons.
Oh, I have no idea. I do know, though, that one of the first times I ever saw you was at a balloon burlesque show.
Yes.
I imagine there's quite a history there.
We produced a balloon burlesque show years and years ago. And then I actually hosted burlesque shows for a long time. My friend Lily von Stupp was producing what I think still stands as the longest running weekly burlesque show in Los Angeles. She stopped doing it a few years ago. But I hosted that show so many times, and there is so much stuff. You grow so much as a performer. There is stuff I did early on that I'm not proud of, but it was a learning experience. You know, I told really dirty, awful jokes when I was doing it, because that's what all the other MCs did.
You and me both. I when I first started, I did all sorts of jokes that I cringe now.
Yeah, you do. That's why I feel bad when I hear about, you know, somebody gets hired for Saturday Night Live and that they're digging up their tweets from 20 years ago. Like, you know what you say and do when you're a young comic trying to find your voice versus what you do once you're established is so different.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, eventually my thing with Monday Night Tees became that I was the clean host. I was kind of doing my kids' material with kind of a wink and a nudge, because I'm doing kids' tricks and balloons in between girls coming out and taking their clothes off.
By the way, I had Lily on my show probably about a year and a half ago now. That's awesome. And she tells all sorts of different experiences.
Oh my gosh.
Doing her burlesque show. She has wonderful, wonderful, amazing stories. Lily von Stupp, if anybody wants to hear that.
The one thing that I did that remained is I would play this sweet, innocent character all night. And then somewhere like middle of the second half of the show, I would say, I just want to clarify, we have different hosts all the time here at the Monday Night Tees. I'm just one of many people who gets to guest host on occasion. And as you may have noticed, being a kids entertainer and doing balloons, I work pretty clean. And so I don't want you to come back and be surprised by one of the other MCs and hosts at the show. So at this time, I would like to present you with some of the jokes you may hear on a normal night here at the Monday Night Tease. Not my jokes. I would never tell these jokes. I'm just doing this for educational purposes.
Ah.
And then in my usual, very sweet, innocent Buster Bloom tone, I would tell like five or six of the raunchiest jokes ever, which were the same jokes that got told all the time at that show. Like every host told at least one of those jokes every time they were there, almost guaranteed. And I would run down like the five or six raunchiest ones, say, that way you're not surprised next time you come.
I'm spinning crystal clean Buster Balloon. All right, off of that, Conrad Colon, a fantastic
magician. Hi, Conrad.
Hey, Conrad, a fantastic magician out of New Jersey asks, what thing within the balloon industry excites you about the future?
I don't know.
Hmm.
Seriously, I keep going on about connecting with people. That's really what, for me, balloon twisting stopped being about the art, stopped being about the visual art several years ago. And it really became, how do I connect with people and create relationships with people and create an experience using this balloon? So I would love to see more of that. I would love to see more balloon entertainment coming in the future. I'd love to see more people who figure out how to make something really cool, but also a way to use that to bridge the gap with someone, to use that balloon sculpture to connect with someone other than just the wow factor. But yeah, balloon twisting and balloon art, I think it's in good hands. There are so many wonderful people doing wonderful things, and I'm excited for wherever it goes. My thing is just to keep connecting with people and keep building those relationships.
Brett Bolich. You know Brett?
I know Brett.
He's an excellent family magician out of California, our neck of the woods. He says, besides being a performer, I know you have been transitioning into other entertainment offerings such as KEF. And what does that stand for?
Kids Entertainer Fest.
And your own magic shop. What were some of the mental hurdles when doing this, and how did you overcome those obstacles?
I had a really good coach for Kids Entertainer Fest.
Who?
I had a couple of them. Leah Orleans, who is just freaking amazing. I adore her so much. She had done an interview on the Shazam podcast, and she had promoted a Zoom seminar she was doing for free to promote an upcoming project she was doing. So I tuned into the Zoom thing. Totally was blown away with it. It was all about overcoming imposter syndrome and finding what motivates you, because everyone has different things that motivate them. How to pinpoint what motivates you and tap into that. And that just blew my mind. And I immediately booked her for Kids Entertainer Fest as one of our speakers. Then I booked a private session with her and her coach. And she really, especially with everything that's changed the last year and a half, from live shows going entirely to virtual, and now kind of going back to live shows, but virtual still staying a thing. And like, there's been so much changing, and I just didn't know how to process it. I didn't know how to like get my systems realigned to take on these new things. And Kids Entertainer Fest, I kind of did as a dare to myself, and I honestly, in the beginning, I had no idea how I was going to pull it off. And she totally got me organized, motivated, and got me in the right headspace so I could actually make those things happen. I don't know that Kids Entertainer Fest would have been nearly as good as it was without having her as part of my coaching team.
The thing I recognized most was the diversity of speakers. What was your philosophy on that?
Just before Kids Entertainer Fest, I taught at a virtual convention for clowns. It was a very big clown convention. On the day that I taught, there were, I think, like close to 20 speakers. Two of them were women. The two women were actually a shared session. They were a teaching duo. So out of the like, over a dozen and a half sessions that happened that day, one of those sessions featured women. Every other session that day was old white guys. I was like the seventh old white guy in a row that day. If you look at magic conventions and clown conventions, I think face painting does a really good job of having a diverse group of people teaching and sharing in that industry. Yeah. But almost anything else with entertainers, it's the same. It's not even just white guys. It's the same old white guys over and over again. I say proudly, as an old white guy myself who teaches at these events, I'm really bored with old white guys teaching at these events. I wanted something different. I kept seeing all these conventions that are doing lip service, like, yeah, we're making big changes. We're bringing in more diversity. And there's, you know, one or two new people that come in who barely tick the box. And I was like, you know what? Screw this. So I put together a convention where I literally was the only old white guy. And I was only there out of necessity. I was the guy organizing the whole thing. I kind of had to be there to make it all happen. But other than that, nobody else on that bill. And you know what? It was killer. I will put my convention teaching lineup up against anybody else's convention any day of the week. We had a phenomenal lineup. We had people who I had no business having at my convention. Seriously, there were people who I way above.
Okay, wait. For people who weren't there, give us some names. Go ahead and drop some names.
We had Chris Capehart, who is one of the best magicians working. He is one of the most respected magicians out there. If you say his name to anybody, Penn and Teller, Copperfield, anybody, they are going to go like, wow, that's a great guy. He is one of the most well-respected magicians in the industry. Almost never gets invited to teach at these things. We had Faye Presto, who is arguably the UK's top close-up magician. She is amazing. Oh my God. And she doesn't even do kid stuff. We got a lot of people who didn't do kid stuff because I wanted to get outside of the usual thinking for kids shows. So we brought in Faye Presto, who's this amazing close-up magician who doesn't work for kids, but still had amazing insights on some cool stuff for kids. We had Ajelle Wade, the toy coach. She was a toy designer who then became VP of a toy company and then decided she didn't like that and wanted to go back to being more creative and having fun. So she started her own business as a toy coach. So if you're trying to get a toy to market, she's the person you go to help you do it. If you're trying to make your own toy and you want to get it manufactured and distribute yourself, she knows how to do that. If you want to sell your toy to a major toy company and have them buy it and sell it, she knows how to do that. She's amazing. She was also a big help in the country. I hired her for a session before Kids Entertainer Fest. She was already booked as a speaker, and I was so impressed with what she was doing, what she had to say. I did a private consult with her myself before the event even started. Huh. See, oh my gosh, now I'm
yeah, of course.
On all the amazing things we had. Heather Green, who most people know from the face painting world, and she is a phenomenal face painter. More importantly, she is the person who turned Mama Clown, Marcella Marad's little face paint business into a global brand. Faba TV and Silly Farm, those are the two biggest names in face and body art globally. Heather's the one who took her auntie's business and turned it into that. So we had her on talking about not face painting this time. We had brought her on to talk about business because she's amazing and knows her stuff. And why does nobody ask somebody like that to talk about business? I don't want to listen to another magician do a regurgitation of the old Dan Kennedy stuff or do the exact same lecture that another dozen people could have done. I want to talk to her and see what she has to say about building a strong brand. Because she's got a whole different perspective and some really great different ideas than what everybody else keeps regurgitating for us. And then we had her aunt, Marcella Marad, Mama Clown. Oh,
from the other side.
Who never gets asked to teach magic anymore. Because Faba TV and Silly Farm have become so big, everyone associates her with face painting now. But back in the day, she was one of the most popular clown and magic lectures out on the circuit. And so we brought her in to do her magic lecture, which most people didn't even know she did magic, and she killed it. She was actually, as much as I love Chris Capehart and Faye Presto, and Chris, we had Carissa Hendricks too, who's just stellar on every imaginable level. But for all the those big names I brought in, that's the one everyone loved the most. Everyone wrote to me and said they loved Mama Cloud. And they had no idea. They'd either never heard of her because they're not in face painting and she's kind of been quiet in the magic and clowning world for a while, or they knew her, but they didn't, they'd never seen the lecture and they'd never seen her perform and they were completely blown away. And it was nothing, like it was all standard stuff. She does stuff like the coloring book and she does the thumb tip bill change, but her take on it and how she interacts with the kids is so good. She just floored everybody. It was incredible. So yeah, we got this just stellar, amazing lineup. And amazingly, I did it without including any of the usual suspects.
Good.
So now, as soon as it was done, I put a post on Facebook and said, this is what we did. Our first time, we had 185 attendees, which is pretty good for a first-time convention. Even in person, a lot of conventions don't pull that the first time.
Yeah.
Especially for kids entertainers. So we had 185 attendees at the event. We had a stellar international lineup of speakers. And no old white guys.
That's great. That's great.
So the challenge from me, and in case anybody missed that post and you're just hearing about this now, my challenge to all the other conventions is you need to step up your game.
There you go.
Because if I can book an entire convention, if I can have close to 20 sessions of all women and people of color, no old white guys, why can't you get more than one or two on your bill of 30 or more speakers?
Bingo. Good.
Kids Entertainer Fest, for the record, is open to bringing in some old white guys as speakers in the future, as soon as other conventions stop booking nothing but old white guys. But until then, I'm very happy to have my event be the place for those voices. And sure. You know this as well as I, especially being here in Los Angeles, this event was to train other kids entertainers to be better at what they do.
Yeah.
Right. And to inspire them. Yeah. Representation matters. The people who I booked for this event look like the kids I see when I go to my shows. And that was really important to me. I want other performers to see women and people of color being the leaders in the industry of kids entertainment, because hopefully that will eventually encourage more women and people of color to become involved in kids entertainment. Mm-hmm. And to aspire to that level where they're not just the performers, where they are the mentors and the teachers for other people. And that means that there are more women and people of color out doing the shows, so that somewhere, some kid at a library is going to see someone who looks like them doing the show. And that's going to make them see the possibilities of what lies ahead of them.
Brilliant. All right. That brings us to our final question for you.
The final one.
Get you out of here.
All right.
and this has to do with your fest. Benji Wybie, I think that's how you say it. Clown, magician.
Benji, yeah, is correct.
Is that it? Okay. Yeah. A clown, magician, and dad out of Germany. Thanks for the great and diverse Kids Entertainer Fest. When is the next?
We don't know yet. It'll be around the same time. I'm fluctuating between May and June next year, but it'll definitely be happening again. We've already had people asking about doing it again. There's already a few people who I'm eyeballing as speakers for next year. So yeah, there will be another one. So many events are rushing back to do in person, which is great. I love a good in person convention as much as anybody else. But the last year really showed me the value of virtual. And there are so many people who, for any number of reasons, cannot travel to a convention. It's not just that it's convenient, inconvenient, or expensive. There are real legitimate reasons. They have children at home, and they can't afford to bring the kids to the convention, which would keep them from being able to really learn anyway, or they would have to pay someone to babysit their kids for a week.
Yeah.
And that's just not realistic for everybody. There are a lot of people who can't come to convention, or maybe they have a relative who they're a caregiver for. You know, they can go out and do gigs during the day, but to be gone for multiple days on end is not going to work. There's someone who needs their attention. Sure. Or they may have health factors. There are plenty of people who, even when there isn't a pandemic, should not be in large crowds like that. I'm kind of borderline. I have a horrible immune system. Really, me being around that many people, I've never left a convention without a cold or a sniffle or something. There are people who are way worse off than me, and that could potentially be life-threatening. Forget COVID, just everyday stuff that goes around those conventions could be a real damage to their health. And so they can't actually come to an event with that many people crammed together for that many days. Mm. And so Kids Entertainer Fest, even if we do eventually add an in-person element, we'll always, always, always have an online element so that as many people as possible have access to the information.
And where should people keep an eye out for the announcements of dates?
We have the official website, which is kidsentertainerfest.com. Mm-hmm. We have the Facebook page is down right now because I need to redo it for post-convention. But the Facebook page is Kids Entertainer Fest. You just follow my regular account, my Buster Bloom Caldwell account on Facebook. I talk about it all the time. I'm just about at my friend's limit, but if you just follow me there, I usually make those things public. So you'll still get notifications when I post about
Great.
I'm trying to promote and sell you.
Cool. Well, thanks for doing my show. That was amazing.
You're amazing.
You are amazing.
You.
Wait. Oh, and thanks to all Buster's fans for those amazing questions. Do you have any other social media or anything you want somebody to follow?
I'm also on Instagram. I like Instagram. That's actually my favorite. Follow me on Instagram. Follow Buster Bloom and Kids Entertainer Fest on Instagram. Those are both fun.
And thanks to all my Variety artists. Tell all your friends about the Variety Artist Podcast. Now go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.
Yay!
That's all for this episode of The Variety Artist. But your journey continues on our website. Go to thevarietyartist.com for more strategies, insight, and resources, as well as show notes on today's guest to assist you in your career. We'll see you on the next episode of The Variety Artist. But until then, go out and book those gigs, make some money, and have some fun.